Welcome to Let's Do It Radio on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com. Welcome to everyone, especially to all of our first-time listeners worldwide. Today is Thursday, broadcasting out of Yakima, Washington, and guest speaker, Sergeant James Parks, keeping it real with black people from Yakima, Washington. How's everybody doing today? Welcome to Let's Do It Radio on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com. Welcome to everyone, especially to all of our first-time listeners worldwide. Today is Thursday. If you have a product or business, you can bring it into doitallinthemall.com, where all entrepreneurs can be found under the client's carousel on the homepage of Do It All in the Mall. Do It All in the Mall has been in business for over 13 years and is a secure 24/7 online shopping mall of over 5,000 stores for all your needs. You can shop for anything you need, all while listening to entertainment, all in your own comfort. You can make a difference worldwide. Take a tour and shop. Let's spend a moment floating before we hit the hot topics of business with a little smooth jazz. We'll then be ready for discussion. In the meantime, call us at 845-241-9985.
People are always asking me, what branch should I join? Let me answer that question by comparing branch missions and locations, military occupational specialties, quality of life, operational tempo, and pay. Let's start with branch missions and locations. The mission of the U.S. Navy is to win wars, deter aggression, and maintain freedom of the seas. I don't want to hurt anyone's intelligence, but this requires ships and submarines and aircraft carriers, etc. Yes, there are land-based opportunities for sailors, but for the most part, you are going to be assigned to a vessel that is at sea, or you are going to be stationed on the coast. If you like water and boats and are more of a beach person, then this might be a more natural fit. If you hate the ocean and don't like water, then the Navy probably should not be your first choice. Because the Coast Guard is not part of the Department of Defense, I usually don't include them in my videos, but the same logic applies here. If you are patriotic and you want to serve, but want to stay in the United States and near water, then consider the Coast Guard. The U.S. Marine Corps falls under the Department of the Navy. Their mission is to seize or defend advanced naval bases and/or other land operations to support naval campaigns. Their specialty is doing combined arms, amphibious, and landing force operations. Marines are focused on combat. Every Marine is a rifleman. This is one thing that I really like about the Marine Corps. Marines are tough and in good shape. This goes for the infantrymen to the supply sergeant. Most Marines are stationed either in North Carolina, California, Hawaii, Japan, or the DC area. If you don't want to live in these areas, or if you don't like working to support the landing force or amphibious portion of a naval campaign, then consider another branch. The mission of the U.S. Air Force is to fly, fight, and win in air, space, and cyberspace. Here is a map of Air Force base locations. Let me oversimplify by saying that the Air Force bases are almost always in better locations than Army bases. So if you like airplanes, space, or cyberspace, there is likely an Air Force base near you. The U.S. Army's mission is to deploy, fight, and win our nation's wars. There are Army bases in 25 states, Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, Belgium, Italy, Germany, Japan, and Korea. Army base locations are generally in locations where there is a lot of land for training. This usually does not coincide with booming metropolises where people focus on health, education, and high quality of life. Let's move on to military occupational specialties. Most military occupational specialties or career fields are available in all four branches. For example, you can be in public affairs like in this photograph, or you can be a supply specialist, a military police officer, a computer or signal specialist, a doctor or a lawyer in all four branches. You can fly planes or helicopters in all four branches. But there are a few nuances. Each branch has its collective personality traits and culture. Some of these may appeal to you, some of them may not. I will say that the Navy is very focused on the difference between the ranks. There are separate dining facilities for officers and enlisted. This is a small thing, but something I had a problem with whenever I was talking with my conventional Navy colleagues. On the flip side, the Navy has a lot of unique and rich traditions. Although the Army has some of the best and brightest leaders in the world, they also have a lot of idiots. Every job on the team is important, but in the Air Force, it's all about the pilots. If you are a pilot, then you are number one in the hierarchy. Everyone else is support. The Marines are known for absolute obedience and discipline, so if you are a free thinker, this might not be your first choice. On the other hand, the Marines have great uniforms. Quality of life is subjective. What might be terrible in the eyes of one person could be wonderful in the eyes of another. But in my experience, and I'm sure that most would agree, the worst quality of life is in the Army and the Marines. Better yet is the Navy, and the best quality of life is in the Air Force. Most of the quality of life standards are cultural. For example, if you live in a tent or sleep on the ground as a soldier or a Marine, then you will be happy to have any old building as an office. But if you're used to state-of-the-art technology and work 9-to-5 in an air traffic control tower, then for sure your standard for housing and offices is going to be much higher. Housing allowance is equal for the same pay grade in each branch of the military. But for sure, barracks and lodging facilities are way nicer in the Navy and in the Air Force. I've stayed at Army lodges that were cockroach hotels, and I've stayed at Air Force lodges that were like 5-star hotels. The Army and the Marines generally do physical training or PT every morning, while many of the jobs in the Navy and the Air Force let you do PT on your own. Even as an officer, I had morning formation and mandatory PT for 14 years of my 20-year Army career. I suspect that some airmen never did morning PT after finishing basic training. Truth be told, I loved my service in the Army and would not have enjoyed a career in the Air Force. Nonetheless, the Air Force quality of life is always much higher. Let's move on to operational tempo. I'm going to define op tempo as how often a member of the military is away from his home for training or for a deployment. I could only find outdated op tempo information, so I'm going to summarize based off of what I have observed and experienced over the past 2 decades. I think it is safe to say that the Air Force has the lowest op tempo. Unless you are a pilot or crew member, you are going to spend a lot more time at home than someone in the Army or the Marines. And when the Air Force does deploy, they deploy to an airfield where there is usually higher quality of life and much more infrastructure or life support. The Navy has sea duty and shore duty. If you want to be at sea and travel the world, sea duty is a good opportunity. Even if you are on shore duty, you can be asked to augment a ship's crew for a cruise. The Marines and Army are gone a lot. This is because they have a high op tempo. Marines are notoriously training for deployment or deploying. Conventional Army guys have long deployments, usually not to well-established locations. I know soldiers who did 18-month deployments to combat outposts. Generally, Special Operations Forces have shorter deployments, usually 3 to 6 months. But even I got stuck in Afghanistan for a 10-month rotation during my second tour. Another factor to consider here is the training phase prior to a deployment. Individual augmentees might go to a training facility for a week to get vaccines and mandatory classes, get issued body armor, and zero the optics on their rifle. Other units do 6 months of intense collective training to prepare for deployment. For all practical purposes, you are away from your family and home for that train-up period. And finally, pay. Pay is a relatively easy evaluation criteria because it is the same across the branches. Soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines of the same pay grade and year get the same pay. Bonuses and specialty pays vary based upon your military occupational specialty. So if money is your most important consideration, then you need to speak with somebody in that career field and ask about specialty pays. Although no one joins Special Operations for the money, I will say that Special Operations forces can make a lot more money than conventional forces when you start adding together jump pay, dive pay, demo pay, language pay, etc. Okay, there you have it. A summary of the major factors you should consider if you're thinking about joining the military. Serving your country has a long and distinguished history. I hope I gave you something to think about and applaud your decision to serve. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to subscribe and to forward to a friend who needs to know this. Life is a special operation. Are you ready for it?
Okay, welcome to Keeping It Real with Sergeant Parks. I am Sergeant Parks, U.S. Army retired. Welcome to Do It All in the Mall. Today we have a great show for you, and we're going to be talking about armed service. We're going to talk about, first of all, before I introduce the main speaker. By the way, she's my daughter, and she developed this project, and the project is called Suited for Service. She's done an amazing job in it, but before we get to that, I thought it was important that we talk about the armed services and each one of the branches, and I want to have a little short discussion on that last clip that we just talked about, and then we'll come back on the other side, and then we'll talk for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'll introduce our amazing guest. Caller 0875. Caller 0875, you want to come in on it?
My apologies. I stepped away from the phone. How you doing? I'm Sergeant Patterson. And just to inject a little bit about the armed services, I joined the Army in 75. So I found it to be one of the greater experiences for me. As he talked about the different branches in the intro, it was interesting because I went to each branch and he pretty much laid it out what each branch would do. And the funny thing about it, I was going to join the Marines because I was, you know, snotty-haired kid, going to join the Marine because the uniform looked good. But unfortunately, I ran into a rockhead who scared me to death. So I went over to the Army and, you know, kind of took a different route, which I was glad because as soon as I got there, I met another sergeant who was a Marine. I'll never forget, his name was Sergeant Gallagher. And he told me that if I had stayed in the military, I'd be retired now. Don't you ever get out the Army. Well, that pretty much introduced me right into my life career because I spent 37 years in the military. And it was an interesting experience. You know, I think that anyone who joins the military, as your intro presented, you should get a basic foundation and understand what you're about to embark upon. When people ask me the same question, I always say there are two things. Soldiers are dispensable. They're weapons. And you have to be prepared to be utilized as a weapon. You know, if you're ready to, you know, give up your life for the love of country and family and friends, then this might be the thing you want to do. If you're not ready to do that and fight the good fight, then maybe that's something you want to take on somewhere else. But I think that all the branches are great. As I always tell my battles that we're all one military serving one purpose to meet one mission. So I think the branches each contribute something that is magnificent because, again, freedom don't come free. So I find that being in the military was the greatest thing I could have done. So once I retired, I came back out and kept soldiering up for the Lord, as well as trying to help as many young men and kids as possible. So sometimes I introduce the military to them about recruitment, and other times you can tell that might not be suited for them, but I can still help them to move forward to accomplish their destiny, or at least reach their destiny, accomplish their goals. So.
Wow, amen. That was great. That was great, David. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Of course, I am retired U.S. Army, and I'll get a little bit about my bio later. But let's go to Janet, 8238. Janet, what are your thoughts about the military? And let's try and keep our comments to about 2 to 3 minutes so everybody get a chance to get some shots in. And after Janet, we're going to introduce my amazing daughter, Miss Laquita Park.
Okay, I'm here. I just found that video very interesting. I really liked it a lot. The explanation of if you're like this, you go to the Navy. If you're like this, you go to the Army. And I've always, I don't want to laugh about this, but I've always thought, wow, I don't know that I'd be able to endure boot camp. is there a boot camp for every one of these branches of the military?
Oh, yes.
Do you know?
Oh, yes, there are. They're different, you know, in types, depending on what service you want to go. But, yes, there's a boot camp.
So everybody who comes into it has to go through boot camp training, right? No matter what position that you're going to take?
That's absolutely right. You got to go
in. Okay.
There are different times, though. Some of them are 10 to 8 weeks, and some of them are a little longer. It all depends on what service
you're on. Wow.
But
they are
quite interesting. They are quite interesting and exciting.
Uh-huh. And boot camp's pretty tough, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You have to show all of your faculties, and I'm sure David will attest to that since he's been to many of them. But, yeah, you have to have a capacity to be able to withstand the rigors. You have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Marksmanship to physical fitness to showing that you can lead. It's quite, you know, the United States military is the most well-equipped military anywhere in the world, period.
I didn't know that.
Bar none.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Wow. That's good to know. And, you know, I'm so grateful for all the people who serve. I don't know that I'd be able to cut the mustard to be a part of it, but I'm very, very grateful for everyone who's in the services. So
yeah,
I don't know that I would laugh. Go ahead.
The military is not for everybody. That's
mm-hmm.
the thing right there. The military is not for everybody. That's why they do the basic training and the skills training that you have to go to. Just sort of like
weeding
out those people that probably wouldn't make a good soldier. Okay, so Janet, thank you for that comment. Now we're gonna go to introduce our main speaker. Now this lady, I've known her since birth, and she is really she always remind me of just how deep the world can get. And she proves that. She's a caring person. She is doing so many things. When she came to me with the project that she was doing, I was saying, wow, now look at this girl. Wow, that's just really amazing and stuff. But I'm going to let Laquita introduce herself and tell you some of the things about this project. We're going to try and keep this topic to suited for service, and then we get a little time, we'll talk about more exciting things that Laquita is into. I mean, all over the place. She's everywhere, you guys. So without further ado, I introduce to you the amazing Laquita Parks. My love.
Thank you so much. I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, who is he talking about? So I'll pay you later, Dad. Okay. So I am Laquita Parks, and Sergeant Parks is my dad. Okay. And so who am I? I am the owner and publisher of Pay Pro V Publishing. And Pay Pro V means pain, progress, victory, because without pain, there's no progress. And without progress, there can be no victory. So I help people take their stories from a thought to a realization, because we know that 100% of everybody living and dead has a story. 100%, not 80%, not 90%, not even 99%, but 100% of everybody that has been dead has a story. And so what's your story? So I am so excited to talk about this project, Suited for Service. And I was listening to the clip, and I was thinking, wow, you know, as I've gone through this project and worked with some amazing veterans who contributed to this project, I learned a lot. I want to say something about David Patterson. David Patterson is one of the contributing authors for Suited for Service, and I learned a lot from his story. And I'm excited that he had an opportunity to be on and you guys had an opportunity to hear from him. But Suited for Service is a community service project, and it is an anthology. And it's an anthology of stories by the unsung heroes of the Brotherhood. So I've never been in the military. My dad was in the military. And there are stories that even, you know, my dad's never shared with me. But there are stories, and you guys who participated in this, veterans, are heroes. You guys are our heroes. So one of the authors, his name is Von Ward. He's actually in South Korea right now. And he came to me on September 11th, 2020, 1 year ago, and said, hey, I want to do something to recognize veterans and to recognize, you know, something in memory of 9/11. So I thought about it, and I thought, okay, well, let's do it. But I said, but you know what? I don't want to gain anything from this. Let's, you know, there are so many organizations that support veterans. And I wanted to do something where we could give back to veterans. So 100% of the net proceeds, the net profits from the sale of the book will go to a nonprofit organization that specializes in helping veterans, homeless veterans, veterans who are, you know, suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. And David knows a lot about that because he works with a lot of veterans. And this project has been amazing for me. There are some of the authors who were contributing to this book have taken time from their schedules to join the call. So I hope we get a chance to talk to them and to kind of hear their story. Sergeant Parks is also a contributing author to this for this book. So, you know, those of you who are listening and you know Sergeant Parks, purchase the book just because Sergeant Parks is in it, okay?
All right. So now you know the rest of the story. Okay, so we're gonna take a minute here so I can make sure that everybody on the line is thoroughly vetted. And what I mean by vetted, now it's not no Donald Trump thing, y'all. What I mean is just make sure everybody get a chance to participate in this great conversation that we're having, because I don't think we do it enough. We do not do it enough. We don't congratulate our military past and present for what is going on in these difficult times. It is so difficult. It is so difficult for soldiers these days. If you can remember January 6th, and I'm not going to comment on that, January 6th where that we had to guard the Capitol from ourselves. Okay, so let's go to caller 0072, and what is your comment on anything that we covered up to this point?
Well, I thought the information about the military was very informative. I joined the military back in 1976. And there was really not a lot of information at the time. Basically, you could find flyers. They would come to the high schools. But one of the things was you really kind of had to depend on a recruiter in order to get any information. And that depended upon whether you got a good one or you just got somebody who was going to try to kind of steer you through the military. I'll just say it like that. So I actually ended up being pretty lucky. I got a very good recruiter that walked me through the process for the military and kind of gave me an insight on what boot camp would look like. So I was pretty prepared. I had never been yelled and screamed at in that fashion or had anybody in my face like that. But because he talked to me about it and gave me some insight on it, I have to say that I was far better prepared for it. And it was a very interesting journey, but nonetheless, I am so grateful that I joined the military.
And what branch of the service were you in?
I was in the Air Force.
Okay, thank you.
In the Air Force.
Thank you. How long did you serve?
Well, I would have made a career of it. However, one of the things that I did find once I got in the military and got training, I had a very interesting job, which I absolutely loved. And they didn't have a lot of accommodations for women. So when I got married and had kids, they really just didn't have a lot of accommodations for us as women. And so I decided to depart. So I was there right at my 4 years.
Oh, good. Great.
Yeah.
Any service is great service.
Yes, it actually is.
Yes.
And I'm actually one of the contributors to the book. My story is in the book, Suited for Service.
And your name?
My name is Gwen Marshall.
Okay.
Gwen, can I ask you a question? Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Glad to meet you, Gwen. Go ahead.
Gwen, can I ask to be a little bit specific? What was the accommodations that you didn't care for?
The conversation I didn't care for?
No, the conditions. You were saying there was issues of being a woman that...
They didn't really make a lot of concessions for women who were carrying children if you had to, you ended up being stationed someplace else and you got orders to be stationed someplace else and you had to pack up and leave. They just, at that particular time, they really didn't have the types of concessions that they have for us, for women now. And it made it hard to be in the military and you were trying to be a parent and have children. So it wasn't that I didn't care for it. It just made it very hard for me to try to do both.
Well, no, now I understand because my dad was in the Air Force, and mm-hmm. I never really thought about how if it was a female going, you know, because when he left, but we were home with our mom. So I really never thought about it like that. So that was a very good point. Thank you.
Well, you're
welcome.
One of the things I
need to note that think about during those times, right after the Second World War, and what's going on in America. It's the same type of thing and stuff that we have going on in the military. You know, like where is the woman going to go? Can she fight on the front line? So what can she do? You know, so she's absolutely right. She's absolutely right. All the military, all armed services and stuff were like that, restrictive as to what the female could do. Even though at that time we had females, you know, that fought and gave service and stuff in World War II, that already showed you what women can do. You know, but our government wasn't set up for that. You know, limited duty is what they call it and stuff, and so that's what happened. But you'll find now much of that has changed, you know, the housing aspect and then how they get their assignments, the whole lot has changed. Okay, let's go to caller 5864. Caller 5864.
This is Iris McDuffie, and I'm a registered dietitian, and I had the same pleasure of meeting you, Sergeant. I am a friend of Laquita's, and I used to live in Atlanta, but I worked as a dietitian in the VA, and I simply love that position. I love serving those veterans because they always brought many stories, and they always told me about those different kinds of eating experiences that they had. And so I was able to speak to them from a nutrition standpoint, but it was always an opportunity for me to learn from them as well. I'm not a veteran. I just served as a dietitian at the VA. So
You are a veteran, you know, because one thing that we can't comprehend unless you've been in the military and stuff is that you have so many different support groups. We could have never did all this on our own. It's just that while we were fighting and stuff, if something happened to us, we had to come to you guys. You guys had to fix us up and then send us back, you know. So don't think you're not no veteran. I always say it takes a whole team of people to be able to move this, okay?
Okay.
A whole group of people. I mean, it goes from A to Z. You might not say you was in the military. Some people got GS grade and stuff, and their GS service and stuff did what? Then they had to move the troops some kind of way. You know, they had to make sure the troops have what they're supposed to have. So you are a veteran, you know. So thank you for your service.
Well, I always welcome the opportunity. It was an awesome experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to 6920. Last 4-6-9-2-0. Is that you, Sharon?
That's me. Yes, that's me.
Okay, well, you could come in. Oh, Sharon, I know one of the questions that you asked me a long time ago and stuff, and I think you asked it a couple of times, was that how come dependents of the military didn't get the full benefits ride and stuff, you know, and I want to try and address that question and stuff, even though I think I'm not fully qualified to do that. That they didn't get that full ride, like when your dad was in the military, the extended PX and BX privileges and stuff. You want to get. I for one still don't know why, but I kind of think that it might be hooked up to. And David, if you're on and you want to comment, it might be hooked up to the fact that each armed services has a budget, the money they're going to have to spend for that. And all that goes back to the Pentagon as to how that's going to be divvied out, you know. So I think this along those lines. It sounds like a good idea. I mean, the presidents and then they family, they get to go to Walmart and all of this, even when they're out of service and stuff. You know, we had a commercial about that, a report about that several years ago. You know, they still get their benefits and stuff. And then why can't dependent of ex-military service be able to do that? So that is a good question, you know. I'm not sure I answered that correctly. Okay.
I hope one day they do, because that would put more money into the military. And that's, you know, we lived on the basis, you know, that was our family. That's what we grew up with. That's what we know. And to take that totally away from us is just kind of, I don't think it's right. I miss going on the base. I felt protected. You know, I grew up on the base. So it's kind of weird that I can't go to the commissary.
Hopefully we can get a caller and stuff to come on to be able to address that a little better than I did. So one more comment before we move on?
Yeah, I wanted, since we're talking about suited for service and while we have a couple of the authors here, I'd like to just talk to them and just ask a couple of questions. I want to know, I asked, and sometimes when we ask people to do things, sometimes they'll do it just because of the person that asked. And I get that a lot, so I'm honored in that way. But I want to know with David, if he's still on the call, and Dad and Gwen, why did you take your time to submit your stories to Suited for Service? And don't say because I asked. If it's because I asked, that's fine. But your stories, and you got to buy the book, so you have to buy the book. So don't give the whole cow away. But why was it important for you to participate in this project? And before you answer, I do want the world to know that everybody who was on this call that contributed, they are first-time authors. And Paper V Publishing is so honored that you guys are now officially published authors as soon as this book is officially launched on November 11th. So let me publicly congratulate each one of you and thank you guys for trusting this vision. So go ahead, David.
Oh, I was going to say, first and foremost, obviously, your father gave an amazing introduction about you, and even more, I'm sure that all of us who are contributors to the book, as well as some of the other authors, would even concur that it's really amazing when you're blessed to come before someone who does things because they love what they're doing, and they love to contribute to the world, to be the difference that makes a difference. So to answer your question directly, I always felt that every human being, as you said, we have a story. Matter of fact, I always say everyone was a walking book with various chapters. Mm-hmm. And when you meet most people, you meet them somewhere in the middle of their book. And as you meet them somewhere in the middle of their book, you know, you have to take time to discover what is the other few chapters prior to the moment you met them. So when it comes down to soldiers, and I've been blessed to experience people from one continent to another, multiple branches, multiple race, ethnicities, cultures of soldiers. Matter of fact, as I work with a group of civilians, we call them civilian soldiers, so the one who came on that talked about, you know, did they make a contribution, is absolutely true. They make a big contribution. They are the support. They are the legs that keep us moving. But with that, I like to say that the reason I've done this is because telling the story of a soldier and the challenges and a little piece of my story is in there. More, I'll bring it down to PTSD and traumatic brain injury and the things that after the war, after the battle is over, there's a new battle that soldiers face. Many people see soldiers on the street. They say, why don't they go and just get themselves some benefits? They got benefits. Why don't they go to the VA? Well, I always like to say their story is different than your story. Their situation different than your situation. And what you see is just a part of what they have been experiencing. Many soldiers don't shoot for the red, you know, try to go through the red tape because it's too much. They're already bombarded with post-traumatic stress. They're bombarded with brain injury and other physical injuries. And so it's very difficult sometimes, and people lose hope. But my reason for telling the story, because I want to be able to help everyone to recognize, especially soldiers, that there's hope for the future. God told us that he gave us hope for the future, and we have to believe that. And sometimes when people can hear people's story versus making a judgment to criticize, they begin to judge to understand. Because just taking a few minutes to hear somebody's story, you begin to change the way your first impression was into a more in-depth impression, where people can now realize that they're just like you. Soldiers are just like you with struggles, challenges. I think one mentioned, a young lady mentioned about family, and they have families and they have friends, but sometimes they fall on hard times, and sometimes we see them out there. So my reason for writing this story, because I want this story to be told, at least to understand from the emotional and mental health standpoint, because again, after the war is over, there's a new battle that they have to face, and we have to be more supporting. I'm the last of the Vietnam era, and you know, when they came home, the people that trained me, they didn't get the welcoming. They didn't get the love. They didn't get the support. They didn't get the cheers. And so I made it my mission to recognize what they have done and the other war veterans from the other campaign. But we're fortunate enough, we came when people gave the cheers, they gave the support. But it's just like when people lose a loved one, they are all there to support you in the interim, but then the months go by and the people drop off. My objective and my own personal mission is that they don't be forgotten. Not one day. I don't want a soldier to be forgotten. I want every soldier to be recognized, to be acknowledged, to be valued, to be appreciated, because they do fight the good fight of faith, and they do make America and many other countries, for that matter, a better place. It may not sometimes seem like it, but again, I always tell people, without the soldiers, this freedom you talk about that you think is free, it'd be way worse. So that's why I join in outside of Laquita asking me.
Thank you so much.
That's what they call David Utaigu. Okay. That's what they call Utaigu. You're absolutely right. You hit it right on the head. In fact, you took my whole theme right off the box, you know. I'm like a military brat. Okay, yeah. I can remember and stuff, my dad being stationed in Mannheim, Germany and stuff, and we went over on the biggest ship that I had ever seen in my whole life, 3,000 soldiers below and 6,000 civilians on above, and go through the English Channel and see, man, it was just awesome. Then to get there and then meet my dad's unit, he was in a mechanized unit, you know, and I'm saying, wow. So me and my brother, he's 1 year younger than me. That's the only thing that we ever wanted to do was to serve. And my dad made it plain. He said, look at here. What's going on out here now in the world and stuff is really not made for us. Kind of a little small town in Georgia that we came from and stuff, you know. He said, you're going to have to get out and you're going to have to do whatever it is that you think that you want to do and stuff, you know. So we pattern our everything right after him. That's the being strike, being professional, the whole nine yards and stuff, you know. The glitch for me is when I retired, I got married and stuff and was going to go in the military and stuff, and whoop, wife got pregnant, and all of a sudden I got the notice and stuff that you are drafted, you know. And I talked to my dad, and I said, wow, Dad, what am I going to do? He said, you're going to stand up tall, and you're going to go do what you got to do. If you don't want to stay in, you do your term, and then you get out. But it was just so amazing to me as to seeing that. You know, during those times when I went into the military was around the Vietnam era. My brother was already coming from Nam. And he was like David said, a broken person. And right, David, the climate was not right. People were spitting on soldiers that was coming back just because they fought in the Vietnam War, particularly a whole bunch of brothers. You remember the DAP, David? Did you hear the DAP? The brothers had to be so tight doing the DAP in Vietnam and stuff, man. And that's how I identified themselves from that whole war. You know, so it was the makeup about that. You know, I knew I had to be better. You know, I knew I couldn't go in there half-stepping. I knew my job as a sergeant was to train soldiers to give their life if necessary. And I took that very serious. I take that serious to the day, you know. So, hey, yes, I understand the way it is, man. So guess what, brother? Amen to you.
Yes. I when I came home, and I have PTSD, TBI. It was in a helicopter accident, and thank God I'm alive. And, you know, the vocational rehab, once I got my act together, vocational rehab said, you know, you soldiers all think of life as every situation is life and death. And I looked up straight in the eye and said, absolutely life and death. I say, because everything we do, either we're going to produce life or we're going to see it to die. And our objective, again, is to always create as much life as possible. So, yeah, I'm not going to change that viewpoint. And like yourself, I'm an Army brat, more from, unfortunately, my parents didn't get married, but my grandfather raised me, who was a military man, and I wanted to join the military. Joined a little sooner than I wanted, but I joined anyway, went on a buddy plan. And unfortunately, my buddy didn't pass the test. And because I wanted to be a soldier so bad, we was in Ohio, was going to Ohio State, and then came home, tell my parents that I joined the military. Then when I went down to AFI Stacy to go, do all the rest of the paperwork, they said, we have no record of you. I said, well, let's do it again. Once I start something, I finish it. So we went on to do that. And, as the young lady spoke about never being yelled at, I was like, oh, my goodness. Back then, they can't do that now. Back then, they could take you behind the barracks and you could go toe-to-toe with them, right? And so that was
a little... I remember when, yeah. when I was getting on the bus and stuff to go to basic training, man, Fort Campbell, mm-hmm. Kentucky, I know that I was prepared and stuff, my mind kept telling me, well, what's going to be the next episode in this? And then we got off the bus with all of our gear a mile before we got to the barracks, to the cantonment area, as they call it. And then we had to carry all our stuff, that mile and stuff, And it was 12 bus loads of basic trainees and stuff that got off that bus, man. But I knew one thing. I said, no, I'm not going to drop here, because they were dropping out, man, like flying.
Oh, yeah.
Still started running behind them, kicking them, booting them and stuff. I said, oh, no, this ain't going to happen to me, So I kept my stuff up, but time I got to the cantonment area, I almost fainted, man, And we lost half of those soldiers, busloads of soldiers.
Yeah.
They had to pick them up in deuce and a half and then bring them to the area. And come to find out, those are the ones that the drill sergeants will focus on, who was going to drop out first. They already had it down pat, man. Who's going to drop out fast? Who's going to make it? Who's going to make it to 0 week, before they break you and get you out of there? But I don't know if I could have done that without the help of my father, my stepfather, man, that prepared me, and then all of the people in his troop that prepared me and my brother and stuff for that. I don't know. You need somebody to be able to talk to you. If you go in like that blind, you could be tough and stuff and then figure out where your weaknesses are, and that really prepared me for the day, man. You don't have to be an expert at everything. Only thing you have to do is know how to get that expertise to where you need it. This is logistics. Where you need it? How you gonna get resupply? Where your next supply gonna come? How you gonna protect 36 guys and $10 million worth of equipment and stuff? Because once it's gone, it's gone. So, man, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure in that. That carries over to the day. And my daughter could probably tell you, I want to make sure that you dot your I, cross your T's.
That's right. But I do want to inject a piece in regards to, I just actually had a prayer call this morning and our topic, what I call Miracle Thursday, and our topic today was showing love to the women. And when I come in the military, I only saw one female outside the ones in the administrative areas, at the hospitals, what have you. And she was in supply, and they got rid of her. And so when I think about the journey of 37 years, I got to see a lot of changes. And I've seen the transition from, she came in 76. I've seen the transition over the years of how treatment changed and how, at the time, I think military men, it was 87% men and the rest women. But I've seen the change, and I've seen the women move forward and progress and become great. And I just happened to be on my way home one day on the road in the middle of the night, and Joe Madison, I think his name was, asked the question about, could women be on the front line? Well, the front line kind of faded away. It's kind of blurred now. It's not like it used to be during the Vietnam period, where you had people in the rear and then you got the front line, if you will. Pretty much kind of gotten away from that, if you will. But I said that I've been blessed to, and I think most people are under this age group, because sometimes I say names, and they're like, who? Well, I would say that, as I said to them, I know women can be on the front line, if you will. I've seen men who could basically take bullets, put them in their mouth, and write their name on the wall. They're the who of the guys, right? And I've seen women just stand, be cool, don't say a whole lot, men kind of taking them for granted. But when all the rounds start coming back towards them, them bullets, and the rockets come in and the mortars start exploding, the things start happening, it would be the women that would stand up and some of the men shaking like Don Knotts. So I know what women contribute to the fight, if you will, whether they're staff or they're right in the trenches. I've seen amazing work, and I just read an article the other day about the women graduate of West Point, and they were all African-American women. So we have made leaps and bounds and changes. Obviously, change sometimes is slow, but I would say that women have made a great contribution to the military, and not just in medical field, but in all the fields, in all the branches. So I just wanted to plug that in because I've seen some amazing work from females, and like I said, I've seen a lot of females that save a lot of lives. So just wanted to say that.
Okay, Gwen, what do you have to comment on that? Since we're talking about females, and I know a lot of amazing females, you know, that I have met in the military and since, you know. Gwen, what's your comment on that?
Well, I think that actually I did the story like yourselves for two reasons. One, because LaQuita asked me, and I love your daughter to death. And the other was because my story was extremely significant as to helping shape me as a person. That was it. Those experiences were very critical. They are a lot of, along with my father, they are a lot of, they built my work ethic. And other things about me, you know, like you said, the thing is we got to cross all the I's, dot all the T's. We can't fall apart. We can't come to the table with a problem. We got to come with a solution to the problem. And I thought it was just so critical that if I had the opportunity to share it, that I do so. It was tough for me back then. I think that the ladies that are coming through the military now are wonderful women. I think that women that came along when I came and those that came behind me were able to help change how they saw us as women and our value that we added to our branches of the military. So, you know, for that, I'm grateful that they've been able to have some changes and that we have been able to contribute.
Wow, that's great. Well, you know, some statistics and stuff is like, David, I don't know whether you or Gwen not remember the Volar Army. Do you guys remember the Volar Army?
Excuse me, that doesn't ring a bell for me, I'm sorry.
Well,
no,
the Volar Army,
I can't say it does.
The Volar was a little bit before you guys' time. I'm a little bit before you guys' time, so I forgive you for not. The Volar Army was an all-volunteer army that they hoped to create, you know, and some say because, you know, during that time, I want to say the early 70s, 70, maybe 75 or somewhere around there, 75 to maybe 1980, the Army was 13 to 15% African American. Now, don't quote me on those percentage, but it was a high number of African Americans in the military. So they come up with the Volar Army, and they want to recruit young, white, getting out of high school and getting out of college to go in because, well, everything in the military, as you know now, is already obsolete. Everything that we carry, you carry in the military, your weapons, your uniform, is obsolete by at least 25 years. I bet you didn't know that, did you? Or you probably did, you know. And they thought that they need a more sophisticated leadership to be able to come in and then take over the technology and then be able to take us in the battle and then win the battle. Well, in my opinion, that was one of the biggest setbacks there was, you know, in the military. A lot of people won't agree with me along those lines and stuff because most of the blacks that were in the military, and particularly the Army at that time and stuff, were already learning technology, those technologies that was already on board and then, you know, beyond, okay? So I thought maybe I'd mention that. And now I think the military, we really don't see a lot of blacks getting into the military because we don't have a lot of people like ourselves that's able to relate that to them. They don't understand, you know, what it would be like. And it's good in a sense that they're so smart and so bright that, oh, why should I spend my time in the military and stuff? You know I learned that, wow, spending time and stuff in the military, you know, open my mind up for organization, you know, some kind of foundation for organization and being able to put stuff into a certain context. Like, I'm good at logistics and stuff, you know, how to move different equipment, time, and people, you know, to certain places. I pride myself off that. You know, I'm consulted and stuff by everybody wanting to, well, sir, well, Mr. Burns, can you do it again? Yeah, okay, no problem, you know. So that's one of the things and stuff, you know, that takes place. And with women, I hate to say it and stuff, women are being used as target. If you've seen all of the things that's happening on the military bases and stuff, women are being singled out. They're being raped. They're being murdered, you know. And it kind of hurts. It kind of breaks my heart to that. Now, one thing I'm going to say before I'm done with this is that if you look at the Israeli military, okay, and some of the French military, well-trained women. So, you know, it's just a big excuse that our women won't be able to do that. I guess they've already proven this in Iraq and then Afghanistan and stuff that they can do the job. So what I'm going to do right now is we're going to do a commercial. First of all, we welcome you to call in at 1-845-241-9985. And enjoy this discussion. And we're going to hear a little tune grooving on Sunday afternoon. And then we'll be back with more of the show.
Why is it so important to shop at doitallinthemall.com? Well, think of it this way. Every time you're buying yourself something, you will be helping to improve somebody's community, life, and their journey. So join us now by shopping doitallinthemall.com. We can make a difference, but we can't do it without you. Shop today at www.doitallinthemall.com.
Just the ships, the armor, or the aircraft. It's something more. It's the will to fight and determination to win, found inside each and every Marine, that answers a nation's call. Battles won.
Yeah, that was all about the Marines there. I don't know if I'm amenable to what do they call them, David? The leather jarnecks. I remember
I was stationed
temporarily, man, for like 12 weeks and stuff in Panama, JOTC, jungle training, okay?
Right.
And my job really was to pick up, the officers and stuff, man, at the airport, Panama, and then take them to JOTC, right? And this particular time, we had this group of jarheads, okay, to come through JOTC, you know. And my role was just to, you know, shuffle them around, man. And then I pick up a load of them and stuff, and they were just like, oh, you know, you're in the wrong service, dude, you know. And they were just going on and on and on. Well, they had to go through this training and stuff, you know. 24 hours after they get there, they have to go through JOTC, you know. And I seen them after that training, man, you know, that night land navigation and stuff. I seen them the next morning and stuff, you know. I'm all bright, bushy-eyed. You should have seen them. Some of them was almost crying, you know. I said, I don't know whether you guys are going to make it, man. You know, but I feel so good, man, behind that.
Mr. Parks?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Parks? Oh, it's Janet again. What is JOTC? What does that stand for?
It's Joint Operational Training Center. It's a jungle training center and stuff that we have in Panama.
Oh,
Panama,
wow. Okay.
Is one of the most densest forests that you could think of, you know.
Wow.
I think when I went through that training and stuff, oh my God, you know, I was so scared. But you know, I got a squad. You got to take a squad through there, so you can't show no fear, you know. When you go in there, and if you get anybody lost, of course they have stations all the way around this thing. It's something like maybe 6 miles in circumference right off the shore, right? And there's a nice little beach, man. It's like 1,000 yards and stuff. You get to the beach, then you know that you're out of bounds. And they'll pick up everybody there and then take them back. But you have to take them through. It's a land navigation course, and you have to do a daytime deal. And this is not an average land navigation course. It's a course where you have to do dead reckoning. You know what dead reckoning is, David?
I'm sorry. Well, yeah, I'm not totally sure on that term, but go ahead.
Yeah, dead reckoning is that you have to maneuver by the landmass, you know. You got to compass and stuff, okay? But you gotta know how to read that map to see where the land masses are that you are, so that you can hit your spots, you know. And there's 8 different spots you got until maybe 12 o'clock midnight before they blow the horn and everybody come out looking for you. You got to hit those spots, you know.
Right,
and you
got to
take
right.
your spot. You got to take your squad through there. You know,
right?
And oh man, those guys came out of there and they were like, oh, they thought they were going to be able to ace that, you know. And so, oh my mm-hmm. God, but it's absolutely scary. You got what you call these hollow monkeys, okay? At night, they come out and they're like in troops, and you guys go and research, they're like in troops and stuff. And what they do, the hollow monkeys and stuff, you be in your sack and they start scare the heck out you, you know. And they got these trees, man, where that they got these barbs that grow out from them like almost a foot. And they're sharp thorns, you know. So you got to wear your gloves and make sure that you understand what you're doing when you're running in that, you know. Oh, man, it was really awesome and stuff. But I like anything that has something to do with knife flying and stuff. Okay, so
yeah, a lot of those terminologies, you know, change the course of time as you begin to talk. You know, you have different terminology for it. I will say real briefly. I remember we had a big meeting. We were preparing to mold and demold the soldiers because I ran that site too, because I ran medical units, troop medical clinics. And so one colonel said, you know, he kept using all these different acronyms and using these statements. He was an old soldier, and so I said, sir, with all due respect, I don't know that terminology. And so, you know, he put me on Front Street and he said, oh, here for first time, we going to sit up here and we going to break this down for him. And so after he said that, I said, well, sir, with all due respect, I said, you know, one thing I've learned, I might not know something when you start to tell me. I said, but I can go from this point on, I can go anywhere in the world and I remember that definition. So I'm not going to be the guy perpetrating like I know something and I don't know it. So when we got ready to leave, the troops and what have you coming out, I said, oh, I didn't know what he was talking about either. I didn't know it either. So, you know, it varies from point to point, and, you know, different units, different groups have their different terminology. So, yeah. Yeah, they changed a little bit of the terminology for not land nav. They don't matter.
Well,
they
I GPS. Bet they have, man. It's been 30-something years. I even, you know, been there. I've been on post and stuff to see what kind of equipment they got. But, you know, yeah, I imagine it has been and stuff, you know.
Yeah, they don't use maps anymore. It's rare. You know, they use they got these little gadgets, GPS things.
I'm sorry. I am so loving this conversation, but it feels like, and I wasn't military. I just put this book together. It feels like there's like an old boys conversation going on that we're not privy to. I love to
okay,
hear from some of the ladies.
We're sorry. Okay.
I know. I'm sitting here and I'm like, I love to hear from some of the ladies. I'm curious. I know Iris is still on and she has to leave, but I'm curious. What's the benefit in What made her choose veterans? She could have been a dietitian for anybody else. Why the military, Iris?
I'm glad you asked that question. I've always wanted to work for the VA. Number one, I actually did my internship as a graduate student at the VA in Little Rock, Arkansas, and I must say it was quite intriguing to be in a facility where most of your patients were men. And so, you know, men tend to have, how can I say it politically, tend to have a less aggressive approach when it comes to their health and, you know, getting regular checkups. So I thought it was an opportunity for me to share some light or enlighten them about how important it is for them to, you know, maintain good nutrition as well as maintain good knowledge and understanding of their disease state. So, tied to that, I've always had an interest in health and wanted to always give back to the community. And because so many African Americans are clinically posted in a little box, if you will, of having every disease state there is, I wanted to try to soften, if you will, that idea that most people have, and then us as individuals an opportunity to be very knowledgeable of our disease states or just take ownership and management of those conditions. And that's one of the things that I learned. And so it forced me to create a way in terms of how I would go about approaching the veterans with giving them good information, but also allowing them to be the manager of their own disease state. So I started with working at the VA in Texas, and then what became very obvious to me was that I had to try to break that mold and try to figure out how was I going to get them to take ownership. And one of the things that I did was when they came to see me after seeing their physician, I had to kind of figure out something that would create that opportunity for conversation, but also give them an opportunity to feel comfortable to share what was going on. And so I find something that I thought would be a segue into getting that conversation started. So it would be, you have on a nice pair of shoes, you have a nice tie, how long you been in the military, whatever. But anyway, it was a way for me to kind of ease into that topic that was sometimes very difficult to have a discussion on. And so what I learned was that there were many individuals, particularly men, but mostly African Americans that were just not in tune with what was going on from a health-wise. They knew enough, but not enough to maintain the disease state. So it made me put on another set of lens and see if I could create an opportunity for us to dialogue and talk about it just as we were talking about their favorite restaurant. And it worked. And I found that the information that I had to share was information that they wanted to hear and needed to hear, and it created that opportunity for dialogue. And so that's why I love veterans. And because we've been labeled with having just about any chronic disease state there is, I wanted to share my knowledge in terms of how we can intervene and prevent some of these conditions. And it also afforded me an opportunity to hear some of their ideas and thoughts that they had about disease states and what it meant. And oftentimes it was wrong information. So trying to correct that mindset, but also giving them, when one has a mindset about X, then you want to also replace it with something that's workable and doable and also positive. So I guess that's what I love and how I came to work with veterans. And then most importantly, the VA paid for my graduate degree, so you always have a special love for someone who's promoting your ideas and your career. And that's pretty much it.
That is awesome. I like that. And a question too, Iris, for veterans: do you think in what you do with them, do you think it's easier? Do you think because veterans are trained to you know follow orders and they've gone through extensive training, do you think they're easier to take orders or take recommendations or suggestions on the health path, or is it more difficult, or does it matter?
I say absolutely not. It's a process, because once we've been trained to know that we have been doing something the wrong way or the right way, you know, we're not very open to changing it. Although we know it's wrong, I think there's a fear of changing because now we have to learn something new. And culturally speaking, you know, we have biases, we have practices, we have beliefs, but we also have some very learned and shared ideas, things that have been passed down from the culture. And, you know, culturally speaking, it's very difficult to change a mindset. It's difficult to unlearn some things because we've been taught that, and we thought and think sometimes from whence we've gotten that information that it is the best thing since peanut butter. So, yes, sometimes it's very different, and especially when you tell somebody they have a condition where it's going to require that they change their lifestyle different from what they've been doing, whether it's a recreational habit, and I call that under the auspices of addictions, whether it's alcohol or drug abuse or whatever, on down to can I eat that moon pie that I love to have every Friday night, or traditionally I eat fried fish every whatever that situation is. So, yeah. But the other thing is to also, when you decide that you're going to provide nutrition education as a nutritionist, one thing we have to keep in mind is that you have to make sure that you understand the culture. You have to understand the root cause of what it is that's causing these individuals to practice the nutritional beliefs that they have. And then you have to find a way to allow them to understand that what they've been doing is something that may not be best for them, but they can take what it is that they're doing and just alter it a little bit and make it even more better and safe for them to manage that disease state. So it really has a lot to do with your mindset. So, yes, it's difficult, but I think it's something that if you approach it from a standpoint of not taking a mandated approach and you give them some ownership in it, and that's anybody, it may take a little while for you to massage that ego, but eventually you get to it. And remember, when folks get diagnosed with something, one of the last thing they want to hear is something about something I need to get rid of, because a lot of times some of the things that we do are most oftentimes comfort. So if you can give them the pleasures of their palate, just reroute them in terms of how they can get to that, I think you can get some buy-in, and transition would be much easier. And also maintaining that level of connecting and developing that relationship, because people will trust you to help them help themselves if they have an understanding that you have a genuine interest and that you you know a little bit about their culture in terms of what it is that they consume and what they like to eat. I think that's the beginning of the conversation. And once you get to that, the rest is history, because everybody wants to feel like they can make the transition with what they already have. And so creating that opportunity for change and coaching them into making that change, I think, is the biggest part of the whole process. And that's what I do and love to do.
Well, I can attest for that. Dad, did you have a comment or question for Miss Iris before she has to leave us?
Well, yeah, that's really outstanding, and you're right. Nutrition is one of the things and stuff that, you know, whether you're in the military or not, you know, that we basically neglect. That's why we're so far behind. Well, not really far behind, but we're behind in a lot of things, and that's nutrition is definitely one of them. So, hey, you know, it's all good, and that's what we need to know. We need that expertise and stuff. And like you say, all you need is a good coach.
That's it. You know, you need a good coach. I mean, that's what car dealers do. They find a mode of operation that they can convince you to do exactly what it is you came out there to do. And so they start giving you all kinds of good prices, and they flip it and twist it and make it sound all kind of good ways. And before you know it, you're walking out there with a new car. Well, I do the same thing with food. I introduce whatever it is that you tell me you like, then I introduce a new way of actually consuming it. Or I also introduce some other things that can have some very similar characteristics based on taste and also maintain the pleasures of those palates based on what it is you say that you like, but also that would be even more healthier for you to maintain that healthy lifestyle and also to better manage that disease state.
Well, I think that is absolutely wonderful. Dad, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, hey, that is so wonderful, and I understand that you're gonna be joining us, you know, and do it all in the mall to bring some of your expertise, you know, to Blog Talk Radio.
I am. I'm excited about doing it all in the mall, and I want you to wrap your head around conversations with the dietitian, and any conversation you'd like to have about food, nutrition, and culture, I am here to share that information with you. I am an excellent cook, I like to say, and so I'm always sharing opportunities or things that I've tried. But there's more than one way to skin a cat, and if you're in the kitchen, you can create just about any type of new food with some of the same ideas and concepts that you've had in the past, but you can also make it healthier. And sometimes, in most cases, it's just a matter of introducing to use some new ideas and some new ways to look at it, and also introducing you to some new items that you've never even thought about, pairing them off and making it work. I think, trying things new and understanding what the contribution is to us as we look at being healthy is the biggest key. I think we do better when we know better, and so I look forward to sharing with you some of my experiences, but I'm definitely ready to share with you some conversations from the nutritionist from an African-American perspective, such that we can have the opportunity to get it right once again, as I say.
And if you need a reference, if y'all need a reference, you can reach out to Laquita Parks at Pay Pro V Publishing, because I can be a reference for her. She has been my dietitian for a number of years now. I've worked with Iris. Iris works with my program, and Iris will actually be one of Pay Pro V Publishing authors with her new book coming soon. So I'm excited about this, and I'm going to tell you guys, everybody in the sound of my voice who can hear my voice, you will be blessed from conversations with the dietitian. She will introduce you to some things, some simple things that you never knew. So I'm excited about that. So Iris, thank you so much for sharing your experience with veterans. We're talking about Suited for Service. And, you know, go out and get the book. And Iris, before you go, do you know when they'll be able to catch you, or how can they reach you?
You can reach me at 706-627-5864. And I am in conversation trying to get set up and so that I could be a part of doing it right in the mall. Am I saying it correct?
Doing it all in the mall.
Doing it all in the mall.
Doing it all in the mall. Okay.
Yep. That's because
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
One thing I'd like to leave you with is that this week is we're recognizing nationally Malnutrition Week, and most of us believe that malnutrition has a lot to do with someone who has wasted, who's not eating, who may be ill because they just can't seem to tolerate and get stuff down. But I wanted to share with you just a tip to kind of give you some insight in terms of what is to come in the future, that malnutrition can be overeating or undereating. So you don't have to be skinny to be malnourished. You can be overweight to be malnourished. Sometimes it's just because we have not chosen the correct foods. So I want to share with you what that means, how we can choose nutritionally dense foods, and how we can prevent ourselves from being malnourished, whether it's us or a family member or whatever the case may be, but some tips and some signs and symptoms for you to recognize. But again, it's been a pleasure, and I need to bounce because I need to get on another call, and I am excited for the opportunity. Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to share with you my passion.
It is 7:26 p.m.
Thank you so much, Wynn. That is outstanding. Can't wait to see to visit your show, and I will be
Iris.
Inviting
it's
you back.
Iris.
Yes,
it's Iris, Dad. You said Gwen.
Iris.
Okay.
Thank you, Iris.
Thank you, Iris.
For the opportunity. And I will be inviting you back to my show.
Okay, same here. Have a great evening, everybody. It's been my pleasure. Take care. This is Iris McDuffie, Diva RD. Have a good one.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
David, before we go off the air, we're going to have to touch bases, man. There's so much we need to talk about.
Absolutely,
and,
absolutely.
David, you are absolutely welcome to come back to my show anytime with any content and stuff that you think that we need to be talking about. That's what this show here, Keeping It Real, is all about.
I'm honored.
Trying to connect with people and stuff to say, at the end of the day, you know, to be frank, a lot of people are looking for 40 acres and a mule and stuff. Well, you know, how can we sit down and we can together figure out how we gonna go purchase the mule or the 40 acres ourselves and run the land ourselves instead of going through somebody else. Have mercy.
That's right.
That's what
right.
my show
that's
is all
right.
about. So I can't wait, man. Okay,
yeah,
so let's
right.
keep it moving. Caller, you can call into the show at 1-845-241-9985, and we'll go into this commercial and we'll talk about. We'll talk briefly about the Air Force. We'll show this clip about the Air Force, and then we'll come back and have some discussion.
When I'm flying, I put my helmet on, my visor down, my mask up. You don't know who I am. Whether I'm African-American, Asian-American, Hispanic, white, male or female, you just know I'm an American airman, kicking your butt. I'm General C.Q. Brown, Jr. Come join us.
Love lower than low prices? Then get more ways to save at Kroger, where you can find personalized coupons, weekly deals, and rewards like fuel points. All for prices that are lower than low. On food that's fresher than fresh. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Okay, we're back here keeping it real with Staff Sergeant James Parks, U.S. Army retired. Do we have any new callers on, Sharon? I'll take it that is a no. So we're gonna talk to Miss Laquita Parks. We're gonna talk to Miss Laquita Parks because she's not telling y'all the whole story of what it is that she's doing besides this. But first of all, Laquita, when will I be able to purchase the book?
So the book, you can pre-order the book right now. The book will be on sale. It's on sale right now for $9.11. The book will officially be launched on Veterans Day, November 11th. And proceeds from the sale of the book, if you purchase, you have to purchase the book through PayProV Publishing in order for the nonprofit organization to receive the funds. Books that are purchased on Amazon don't count toward it, but books that are purchased through our website, you're able to and purchase as many copies as you like. Copies will be shipped to you. Purchase one for a friend. Read the stories. Hear about all of the amazing stories. Gwen's story. She's one of the entries again. Gwen, are you still online?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. When I read Gwen's story, I was very fascinated, and I wondered too. And Gwen and I talked about this. How, when she said in the beginning that it shaped her into who she is now, one of the questions that I asked is, if you had to do it all over again, would you still do it? And that's the question I want to ask Gwen. Gwen, if you had to do it all over again, being a woman in the military and all the things that you went through, and I'm not going to share all the details, so you have to buy the book to read that, but would you do it again?
I would. Yes, I would. I would do it again.
And tell me why. Why would you do it again? And you went through a lot. You went through a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, I did.
And it wasn't all good.
But I would still do it
I would still do it again. It was a great experience minus the hurdles that I had to overcome. It was still a great experience. It was wonderful training. It was just a phenomenal experience for me, being able to work in an area that I truly loved and enjoyed and that I'm still involved in right now. I'm just on the other side of the book.
And Glenn, so share with the listeners what that is, if you don't mind. What is it that you're doing now?
Well, what I actually do now is that I do training for OSHA under the OSHA guidelines. And when I was in the military, who would have known that I would have actually ended up back there? But needless to say, I was what they called at the time, they've changed the name, but what I was called at the time was an environmental health specialist. So what my job was to travel the base and go to the different chow halls, to the pool, to the barbershops, beauty shops, and make sure that they were actually in compliance at the time. And so now I'm actually on the teaching end of that, giving instruction on the specific standards.
Wow, that's really amazing. That's really amazing and stuff. You know, that's all like what I did once I retired in the military. I took about a year and volunteered, you know, just around, just see if I could use my expertise to be able to do something. But what I always went back to was what I learned in the military, the process that I learned in the military. You know,
correct.
Listen, patience, you know, execution. So that is really outstanding, Gwen. Thank you for your service.
Thank you for yours.
Okay, let's see if we got any more callers. Laquita, do you have anybody else that you can think of that you want to call? Let's call it 0072. Would you like to come in?
I think that's Gwen.
That was Gwen.
So 99. So y'all can see I got my digits crossed up here. 9948.
Oh, that. So we're gonna all laugh because 9948 is me, Dad.
Okay. All right. Okay. So that means we got the whole gang is still here. Okay. So go ahead, Laquita, and you can call on anybody. Oh. I didn't say a couple of things that I was intended to say. I made some notes and stuff here, and that was those books. How long will it take for them to arrive here? And then you could put me down for 10.
Okay. So the books will be shipped to you. It'll take 10 to 15 business days. I'm sorry, 7 to 10 business days after the 11th of November. So they'll go out, and then they'll be shipped to you. And I'll put you down for 10, and that's wonderful.
Okay, so are they going to be available on Do It All in the Mall?
You know what? Yes, we can make that work. They will be available and Do It All in the Mall.
Because believe it or not, so we do have people that are listening to this, and they are always say some of them are real shy. They just want to listen, but they don't want to comment and stuff. So just so that we get the word out that they can keep on shopping, Do It All in the Mall.
They can
now
shop,
you can
Do It All in the Mall.
You guys, you can find. Her publishing company is in Do It All in the Mall under the Afrocentric section. So, yes, you can find her, all her information, all her, what she does. And you also can buy her books through her website, like she said. So it's right there for you at your service while you're in Do It All at the Mall.
And you know what? And while you're visiting Do It All in the Mall, think about your story. You know, there is power in storytelling. The thing that's so important, or that was important for me, is giving people an opportunity to share their story. Every person that's in this book is a new author. Every single person has never published before. And it's exciting. There is one person, he passed away. He was in World War I, and his family tells his story in this book. His name was Bob Belcher. He passed away this past April. But every story, after I read every story, there wasn't anything that I didn't learn from anyone. Gwen's story, it was wow. Gwen and I had a conversation. I'm like, really? Did this happen? And just to be able to sit down and talk to each one of these authors about their experience and get that personal touch, that's what I love about what I do with KPRO-V Publishing. We don't just want to publish your book. We don't just want to, you know, have you publish your book and then we say bye-bye. We want to help you talk about your story. We want to help you tell your story. And it's funny, I got connected to each one of these contributors in a very interesting way. How I met Gwen and David. I was on a podcast and I didn't even know David. Next thing I know, he's calling. He was like, okay, I need to talk to this lady. And Gwen, and I've been intrigued by what she does. Gwen and I met at a career fair.
Yeah,
and
it was a career fair.
It was a career fair for young women, and I had the pleasure of my table being next to Gwen's table. And those of you who know me and know my background with mentoring, I am straight no chaser. I don't play with the young people. I'm very honest. I love them dearly. I love working with teenagers, but I'm very honest with them. So Gwen saw that. Gwen saw me in action, and she said, I like your style. And she invited me to come to her class and talk to her women in construction, and it's been a great connection ever since. So letting people, you know, providing a platform for people to tell their stories, it's so rewarding, and it's rewarding for me. It's healing for them. So wherever you are in your story writing journey, we can help you at KPRO-V. Wherever you are, if you have a story, we can help you. If you don't even know you got a story, we know you have a story, but you don't even know how to take it out of your head and get it into book format, we can help you do that. And I appreciate that both Gwen and David have been very, very open, and they've been very coachable, and they've listened to my suggestions and followed them. And David has a book that'll be coming out soon. David, do you want to tell them a little bit about your next book?
Yeah, it's a collaboration of devotions that I've been sending out for the past 3 years, and many of the people that I send them to would say, you know, you need to put this in a book, and you know, I'm like, oh, I'm just doing this, you know, because it's coming from the heart, leave it at that. But the end result is that people have found it to be a life changing experience for them, because the words that come through, it seems to come at the time that they need them. So the book will cover many subjects, you know, from relationships to interacting with God to men issues, to women issues, to couple issues. I cover a gamut of different things in the form of a devotion.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay.
That's heavy.
Yeah.
It's and here's the thing. Your story is your story. So your story, sometimes when people hear, you know, well, I don't want to write this, or I my story isn't interesting, or my story isn't like her story or his story. It's your story. Now, my dad is on the phone. My dad's story is different from my story. It does not negate the fact that we both have a story. And my story might be about walking limitations at the hands of a nurse. David's story is a book of devotions, but it's his story. And the devotions, and trust me when I say they are beautifully done. Beautifully done. David sent me one of his devotions a couple of days ago, and just like I've read all of them, I promise it felt like he wrote that devotion with me in mind. And that's how you feel. This is for me. And so when you read, what we do with at Paper V Publishing is we help you. We do coaching and develop. I coach and develop the authors, and I help them determine who their audience is. So when you're writing with your audience in mind, so you want to connect with them. So we help you take your story from a thought to a realization. So when you go through and if you're considering, I've read this book, I've read that book. When you can think about all of the contributors of this book are all veterans. All of the contributors are veterans, and they all sacrifice for us. And just like David said earlier, if it were not for them and so many hundreds of thousands of others, we would not have these freedoms that we think we have. So think about it. And then when you purchase the book, and here's the thing, I don't receive one penny from this book. This was a community service project, and I didn't take one dime. In fact, the editor, and it's actually edited by Kimberly Park. She's one of my editors. She's also my sister, and James Park's his daughter. So she is the editor of this book. She has a degree in journalism with a concentration in language arts, and she has edited hundreds of books. And she is the editor for Suited for Service. So when you think about it, think of it as giving back to a veteran. It's a small part. It's a very, very small part. And this is why I do what I do. This is why doing this project was important to me. Although I'm not a veteran, my dad is a veteran. My uncle is a veteran. I have, friends who are veterans, friends who are still serving now. Von Ward, who had the idea of the book, he was not able to be on the call because he's on special assignment. But it's important. With everything that's going on in the world, this is a small token. And I chose to do the book in memory of 9/11 because we just had the 20-year, and I don't like to say anniversary, but the 20-year memory of the tragedy that happened for 9/11. And since that time, veterans have played an awesome part in keeping us safe so that, like you said, David, we can enjoy the freedoms that we have. So Suited for Service, it will be officially launched on November 11th, purposefully on Veterans Day. And some of the authors, James Parks, Gwen Marshall, David Patterson, Von Ward, and there are several others. And the stories will wow you. The stories will tug at your heartstrings. The stories will make you cry. The stories will make you laugh. And you know what? Some of the stories might even make you angry. But these are their stories. And I am honored to have been given the opportunity to publish their stories and help them become first-time authors. Some of them, Gwen Marshall, didn't even know that they were going to be a first-time author till I asked, right?
That is absolutely true.
And Dad, what can I say? You know, my dad is very modest. When I asked him about the project, about participating in the project, he was like, "What? Really?" It was really a good thought. He thought it was a good thought. I've always had support from him, and I appreciate that. But for me, the highlight, a part of it, there were so many highlights, but another highlight for me is having my dad's name on this book. And my dad has done so many things with the NAACP. He's done an abundance of things in Yakima. And the highlight for me, too, is seeing my dad's name on this book and that he was a contributor and that he can add published author to his resume of all of the accolades that he already has. So that was a big that's a huge honor for me as well.
I'm not deserving. Hey, wow, that was just outstanding. You know, you guys know her. I don't have to give her no more, you know, accolades because, hey, guess what? She knows what she's doing. In fact, for me, I be trying to suck her brain every time I talk to her. She calls me once or twice a month. Dad, this is what I'm doing. So I get something else, you know, in my mind that I can be doing because I always have to be doing something. Like right now, I got 7 different projects that I'm working and stuff here. You know, they're anywhere from mentoring kids, coaching kids and stuff, and being a community organizer and working with the police department and the NAACP and then working with the schools. So, you know, like my whole district is the worst district in this town. It's right next to Sharon's district, which is the bourgeois district. But my district and stuff is where we have 5 or 6 killings every year like clockwork. You know, abandoned buildings and vehicles. You know, when I first moved here, when me and my wife first bought this house, it used to be so nice. Nice old ladies and stuff, you know, and everybody, hey, how you doing? They speak to each other. But it's not like that, you know. And I know that I make a difference. I'm going to make a difference. I don't care. You know, people tell me sometimes, you shouldn't be standing up and against these people because you're going to get a cap in your Aries. You know, well, that's just me. My wife tells me all the time, you know, look out, you know. But that's the way it is. I care about what takes place and stuff. And my daughter, she actually helps me, you know, remind me and stuff of just who I am, you know, and I love her so much. Okay, so
yeah.
let's go ahead, David. Did you have a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say a couple of things. Unfortunately, I have to go at 8. I was able to shift some things around. But I wanted to say first about Laquita is that, you know, when you meet people that do things from the heart, it's just such a difference. You know, I've checked in the publishing companies in the past for other projects I've written, I wanted to write about. And as I met Laquita through another individual who's doing some amazing work, I knew. My spirit told me that she's not doing this because it's about being popular or developing a necessarily a business or any of these natures that's going to bring, you know, self-fulfilling profits to her. But no, she's doing it because she wants everyone to experience who they are. And when you sit down and talk with her and she begins to show you that you do have value, what your word, what's inside of you can be put into words and people would appreciate it and really grow from it. And so, you know, that's amazing because with a world that people are very self-centered, self-indulging, egotistical, you name it, this company, people who still do it from the heart. And the word tells us that God judges the heart. And I'm sure when he goes to look into Laquita's heart, he just claps his hand and he smiles. So I wanted to say, be on the show, we definitely have to talk because many of the things that you're doing, I'm doing the same thing here. I guess it's a soldier in us. Once we leave one army, we just join another one to be leaving no soldier behind. Everybody to me is a soldier in some form of fashion. Maybe then I might be officially into a quote-unquote army or navy or what have you, but they're still soldiers in life. And being able to help cultivate that, and I really like what Iris was saying as well about nutrition. Part of my project, and I'm working on my PhD, and one of it is about part of it is emotional intelligence, but also working on a project called FMAM, For Men, About Men, which covers 4 quadrants, physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual. And a part of the physical is the nutritional aspect. She's correct. They have done great things, and you and I probably know about the old days of the sea rations and what have you. But the military has become very conscientious of, you know, health. And I was actually a master fitness trainer in the I too am conscientious of that. It's really amazing. I'm looking forward to hearing more of what she has to offer. So, you know, there's just so many people that have been on tonight that is bringing just wealth of knowledge and things that will help us to, I like to say, mature. And as we mature, as we grow, as the word tells us that my people destroyed because of lack of knowledge, we won't be lacking that knowledge because we come in as a unit, as a family, as one to move forward and do what God called us to do. So I just wanted to inject that.
Well, thank you so much, David. I appreciate that.
Thank you, David. You know, that is outstanding. I'm on the same sheet of music, man. Definitely on the same sheet of music, and that's what I try to bring, you know, to this program. You know, I've had a chance to listen to people. That's, I think, the two qualities and stuff that we must acquire, and that is even to understand what our brethren is all about in the situation that most of us is all about. You know, most of our people are not retired and don't have, you know, what we have and the pleasures of life and stuff that we have, even though it's not all up there and everything. But we must be able to relay that, you know, and that is, what can we do together, you know? Our ancestors and stuff, when they got here, they had to create things. They had blacksmiths and whatever and whatever and whatever to come through all of this, but we don't have to live in that, but we got to know about that to figure out now what's going on. We got climate change happening. This pandemic, which in my opinion is man-made, is killing more of us than it's killing anybody else. Now they're talking about it's killing our kids. You know, we have to figure that out. We have to figure that out. We can't let people figure that out for us. We have to, whoever want to listen, if we created something this day as to what we can hang our hats on to be able to do one thing, whether it's writing your book and getting it out there to people and stuff, or whether it's keeping this group together to figure out what you're doing in your area that working, what can we do in this area here that's working and stuff, you know. That's what this is all about. You know, keeping it real is not all about Sergeant Parks. It's not all about David Patterson. It's not all about none of us. But it's all about all of us collectively. What is our collective use and what can we do? God has ordained this, David, and you can put that in the book. God has ordained this, what we're doing right now. Without him, guess what? We could not be here. It could not be possible.
Right. That's right.
You know, I try and listen to my daughter. She comes up with everything, and I'll just listen. She asked me to come in, I come in. A lot of times it's off-the-wall comments that I want to try and make sure that when she says something, I can play the devil's advocate to see if she got it all thought out, you know. And then when I tell her something, then she does the same thing. Not only my daughter, all of my kids are the same way. And I'm going to get around to writing a book, which you guys are going to say, wow, I didn't even believe that, you know. But that's for another.
I know a great publisher. I know a great publisher when you're ready.
Yeah. we know one too.
Baby, don't worry about it and stuff. You know, it can be no other way. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we're in this time here in this program where that first of all, anybody else want to comment? Now, I got so many numbers and stuff here that I'm not going to be able to go through all of these numbers before we close this program. So I'm going to put this out here. Anybody have any comments and stuff that they want to make to my amazing guest and her amazing, I want to say, outstanding networks, you know, because the people that you brought onto this show, I feel it, and I'm not saying something that I don't believe in my heart. You know, I feel it. You guys are really, really amazing people because I hear you. You know, you're actively out there doing something. Now, the people I want to meet, you know, so anybody got any comment? Janet, do you have any comment? Is Janet still on the show, on the phone? guess maybe Janet has dropped off. Is there anybody on the phone?
I do. I wanna make a comment. I have an opportunity to work with some amazing people. Some amazing people with amazing stories. And I don't know why, but I'm chosen for such a time as this, and I don't take that I take it very seriously. One of my newest clients, and all of my clients are important, all of them are, and I give all of them the same professionalism. One of my newest clients, I know that you guys have heard recently in the news, I know you guys know the story of Henrietta Lacks. If you don't know who Henrietta Lacks is, she was a black woman who died in 1951, and her cells were stolen from John Hopkins without the family's knowledge. Well, fast forward to now, Benjamin Crump, I know you guys know who Benjamin Crump is. The family has retained him, and he has filed a lawsuit against the pharmaceutical company. Well, Henrietta Lacks had a grandson, and his name is Ron Lacks, and Ron wrote a book called Henrietta Lacks, The Untold Story. And I'm excited to announce or to share that Ron Lacks is my client. So praise he God. Has trusted me with helping him to tell his grandmother's story. The book was written, a woman, Rebecca Shue, wrote a book. She introduced the family. There was, and that was her, from her perspective. Oprah bought the rights to the book and did a movie called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks that Oprah owned. But this book, Ron Lacks, tells his story, his grandmother's story. His father was 16 years old when his mom died. And he tells the story from his perspective. And that's what we do at Pay-Per-View Publishing. We want you to tell your story from your perspective. So, you know, leave a legacy. I'm excited to work with Ron Lacks. There was an announcement made on Monday that a lawsuit had been filed. It's all over the news. He's all over the news. But he is now my client. And so I'm going to do everything that I can to help him tell his story from his family's perspective. And that's important.
Okay.
It's important. So I can't go into your home and tell your story, but I can tell the story from my perspective because I'm a part of the family. So, you know, support Pay-Per-View Publishing, support the authors. You know, when you hear about us, when you see what's going on, when you see us on Facebook, purchase their book. Send them a message. Talk to them. Engage with them. Let them know, hey, I hear you. Share your story with them. Share your story with me. We can help you. If you're afraid to write a whole book, then we do compilation books or anthologies. You can put your story in a book with other people's story, just like Suited for Service, and you become a published author, but you get your story out. Because guess what? There is always somebody waiting on the other side of your story to get healing from their story.
Wow. Oh, and I might mention too, guys, before we close out and stuff, that she published a book with an elderly woman that was over 100 years old. On the 21st, we will be reviewing the centenarian. So
yes.
I think that's that goes with the nutrition, David, that goes along with what you're talking about, you know, the longevity of it. How do people get to be living 100 years? You know,
yeah.
I think that's important and stuff. So we're gonna look into that. David, you're welcome. Iris, is Iris still on the phone?
No,
Iris
had to drop off. Yeah,
okay.
She's probably still listening.
Everybody is welcome. I think that's some critical information. You know, the nutrition factor fits in because what are we doing? We're dying, and our longevity and stuff is spiked because we're really not eating the right thing. We're not putting ourselves in the right environment. You know, this is coming down to the survival of the fittest. I'll leave you with that. Okay? Everybody's taking care of their own. They're not taking care of us. Okay?
Yeah.
Everybody's taking care of their own. So we need to be come up with a plan and stuff on what we're going to be able to do no matter where we're from. I ain't going to be able to drive to Atlanta and stuff. I can do that maybe once a year, maybe twice a year, but I ain't going to be able to drive to Atlanta every day. So, you know, we can come up with things and stuff to do it.
Yeah.
So, Dad, this caller 8714, would you like to comment?
Yes, this is Andre Pearson. I agree with the young lady that was speaking last time about the books and everything, because as an independent publisher myself and put out my book myself, Why Does Love Hurt So Good, it is about healing people, getting people to understand from a perspective of their stories. As we go through, as Mr. Parks was talking about the health things, you got to keep in mind that while we're struggling to try to find a way to do things in the Bible, in Leviticus, what we need to do, it's already there. If we follow it, we wouldn't have these problems.
Yes, yes.
Everything's already laid out for you.
Absolutely, Andre. You hit it right on the head, man. We can't do nothing without no faith. You know, people out there talking about, oh, if you go, God will go be here, he would have been done that. No, what we need to do is get right with it. You know, we need to get right with it and stuff. We don't even trust each other. We got the worst relationship of any of God's creatures. Now, I might be wrong in that, but that's just the way I feel sometimes in talking to people in general to find out where we are and what we can communicate. So most of my time with people is just listening. I just want to listen to them. Where you been counts and stuff. If you ain't been nowhere to be able to do anything, then I want to listen. How can I help? What are you doing to help yourself? You know, what can we do? And then what about the kids? All of this right here ain't for me and you and nobody. It's about the kids we got coming up now. What are we doing? How are we engaging them? You know, are we yelling at them and screaming at them? Hell, they don't want to come home and talk to us. We got to listen to them. And then we got to try to make sure and stuff that they understand with trust, okay, that number one, they can come to us when they're having something, and we got to be there for them.
Blood
in, blood out. That's what we got to do. So thank you, Andre, for that comment, man. I really love that. And I'm getting sentimental about this, man.
Well, I can tell you this much here. The way the world is going and where we are drifting away from different things and believing more in ourselves than what God laid out for us, we're going to continue to have these same problems. We are one of the few people on the planet as a group of people, as African-Americans, that just do not understand that working together can get us where we need to go. We always fighting one another because you're trying to play monkeys in the barrel.
Thank you.
So it's kind of hard to do that because people don't see that. So we're considered to be buyers, not sellers. There was a Jewish guy that made a comment on the news a couple months back. He said that black people cannot hold on much to money, but as long as they hold on to smoke.
Yes. Yeah.
40 million African Americans. 40 million African Americans in America. Point. Okay, 40 million African Americans, 1% of the total wealth. Now, if that's not enough to try and move at least people that got the knowledge to understand what that means, you know, 1% of the wealth. Why? Because we're paying all the people and stuff that want to take the government and give it to Russia and give it to North China and all of these different places and stuff. We're putting most of that money in these areas that they need it. You ain't got to give me nothing. Just open the door. That's the way I look at it. You know.
Well, you know that African American people on this planet spends $1 trillion a year on products and services of other people. You can go to any black neighborhood and find all kind of restaurants in their Chinese restaurants, everything else in their area. But you can't go to white neighborhoods and find these black businesses like that in their neighborhood. And that's because, again, we're stuck on materialistic things. We're so ready to get the iPhone 13 and ready to get some clothes. We don't understand that rich can go away. Wealth don't go nowhere. Rich go away quickly. People don't understand that. You cannot increase it.
You got to own something. Okay.
What else is that about it? They think in owning things, what they think about owning is materialistic things. We don't understand that we cannot increase our wealth if we don't increase our network. And we don't know how to network. And we're not talking about just giving some business cards and call today. We got to understand to ask the right questions. That's one thing we just don't do as black people. We don't ask the right
questions.
And
keep the money going. Keep the money going in our circles. We have to keep the money. Money got to touch the hands in our circle in order for us to be doing, I got to say, smartly, okay, touch the hand in our circle so it comes back to us. You know, people thinking that these rich white people and stuff, they go out and they spend $100 million worth of cash. These people live on credit, man. So if you ain't got no credit, what are you going to be able to do? You see,
that's one of our major problems, though. That's one of our major problems as black people. We don't understand how the system. We're in a game. We are playing a game. We don't even know the rules. We're just out here playing. We're collecting shiny objects. We're collecting shiny objects and a few dollars in our pocket and think that we're rich and got it going on. We are playing a game.
That's
we don't know how to win.
It's by design. It's by design, too. It's by design.
But if you know the game, you know the game.
Things over and over. No trust.
But you have
no
to know how to play the game to win.
There you go.
Well, gentlemen and ladies, I'm going to have to go this day, Pat. I'm going to have to go. But I do want to say, you know, these are the 1,000 conversations we've had, and most of us are pretty seasoned now. We've had the 1,000 conversations, you know. But until we begin to trust each other and seek God for guidance instead of leaning onto our own understanding, this cycle will continue. I remember very vividly when I was a kid, Tom, he said it's a trillion now. That was 1974. Tom Brown was the host of a black journal. And I learned something at that time. I never forgot it. He said that with blacks, money only stays in our hand one time. But it is with other groups, it stays in their hand one time. But with us and our group, it stays in our hand multiple times. He said that at that point, as a consumer, we are spending $1 billion in consumption, which he's broken down and said that $1 billion looks like this. Because sometimes we talk big numbers, you can't see it. But he said you can spend $1,000 a day for 2,335 years at having $1 billion. Bill Gates is worth $80 billion, so think he could do this forever and a day. We don't understand the meaning of what money is all about. It's really just an exchange for what you want. And most whites and other ethnic groups realize that it's not about having cash in your hand. It's about power and control. And until you be able to learn how to use power and control, and especially by letting God allow you to be a wise steward with this, then we're going to continue to do this. Most of us are walking around like Ray Charles leading Stevie Wonder. We're blind, and until we seek God, we're going to continue to be blind. But once we seek Him and His guide through the Holy Spirit, then we'll begin able to see. Unfortunately, I got to go, but it's been
Amen.
An honor. I hope
love
to get
you.
Back on.
Hey,
and,
love you, brother.
Yes.
Love you, brother.
Yes,
thank you, David. Thank you so much, David.
It's an honor. Yes, guys, and I think it says, Andre, yes, you're bringing some really heavy stuff there. But, again, I have to go. But, man, I just hope we can unite, as I always like to
say.
One finger.
Can I say this before you go?
Absolutely.
Real quick, I'm going to say this and let you know. We have to understand as black people, in order to grow black businesses and make them competitive with other people, we got to take the black and white out of it and remember it's about products
Good.
And services. If we give
That's
our people
right.
products and services they can actually depend on and rely on, they're going to come and shop with us, be with us, do with us, and continue to grow with us if we do these things. But we cannot put black and white in the front and take away the products and services. That's what they're buying from other people. They're not buying Target. They're buying stuff from Target. They're not buying McDonald's. They're buying food from McDonald's. So we got to provide the products and services, the quality that we give, that they give us. We need to say same quality back to them. And they understand, they take the black and white out of it and say, you know what, good quality, I take it, I keep on shopping there. But as long as we put black and white in front and think it's about black and white, we're going to continue to lose. Be the last player and complain about
money,
it every day.
The money is green. The money is green.
That's
so
right. That's right.
Hey, guys,
That's
I'm going
right.
to have to
okay.
I'm gonna have to wind it down now at this point.
Okay.
Hey,
God bless.
David,
love you guys.
Andre,
yes.
Hey, you
thank
guys,
you.
I am definitely
going
to set something up so
thank
that we can
you.
Come
thank
back
you.
And stuff and be able to do this. Hey, thank
yeah.
everybody and stuff. So right now I think that we're going to go, we're going to slip to the end of this. Sharon, please take us home.
Right.
Love you guys.
Love you guys. Thank you.
Someone to see other people, get some other perspectives, you know, see what else is out there.
I have got sailors from all around the world, different backgrounds, different beliefs and religions and race, but also different upbringings.
We take people in the Navy from around the world, and I think that's important because you get ideas from all over.
I'm from New York.
I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana.
I am from Vermont.
I came from Cuba.
I'd never been on the ocean before I joined the Navy.
I'm a first generation sailor.
We're all given the same test. They're just simply looking at how well do you do your job.
If you're diligent and hardworking and you study the references, you can do anything in this Navy.
You get to a certain level of leadership where you can actually affect culture.
There should be no reason why it matters whether you're a man or a woman or black or white or what your gender identity is.
Everybody has equal rights and equal opportunities.
The Navy has given me more opportunities than I ever could have imagined coming from a small town.
I've been to Bahrain, I've been to Italy,
Australia, to Singapore, Philippines, Thailand.
I've been so many places, I'm trying to keep them separate.
I mean, I've been to 4 or 5 different countries in the last year.
Being in the Navy and being to another country, to another culture, I mean, it teaches you how to find yourself, how to actually be an adult and be responsible.
No matter where you go, you're going to meet people from places you've never been before, and they're going to have experiences you've never had before. So learning from those people is one of the biggest advantages, I'll say, from being in the Navy.
The people that I work with, they immediately become like a group of family.
Anytime you've got a team that's able to get something complex accomplished, right, do something hard together and do it well, that builds morale.
You can't learn this level of teamwork or hardship or flexibility anywhere else.
You will not find an organization or a business in the world with the diversity that the Navy has, or more importantly, a business that uses its diversity the way the Navy does to win wars.
When I'm flying, I put my helmet on, my visor down, my mask up. You don't know who I am, whether I'm African American, Asian American, Hispanic, white, male or female. You just know I'm an American airman, kicking your butt. I'm General C.Q. Brown, Jr. Come join us.
I'm thinking about wearing the same flight suit with the same wings on my chest as my peers, and they're being questioned by another military member, are you a pilot? As the commander of Pacific Air Forces, a senior leader in our Air Force, and an African-American, many of you may be wondering what I'm thinking about the current events surrounding the tragic death of George Floyd. Here's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about how full I am with emotion, not just for George Floyd, but the many African-Americans that have suffered the same fate as George Floyd. I'm thinking about protests in my country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, the equality expressed in our Declaration of Independence and the Constitution that I've sworn my adult life to support and defend. And thinking about a history of racial issues and my own experiences that didn't always sing of liberty and equality. I'm thinking about living in two worlds, each with their own perspective and views. I'm thinking about my sister and I being the only African Americans in our entire elementary school and trying to fit in. I'm thinking about then going to a high school where roughly half the students were African American and trying to fit in. I'm thinking about my Air Force career, where I was often the only African American in my squadron, or as a senior officer, the only African American in the room. I'm thinking about wearing the same flight suit with the same wings on my chest as my peers, and then being questioned by another military member, are you a pilot? And thinking about how I sometimes felt my comments were perceived to represent the African-American perspective, when it's just my perspective informed by being African American. I'm thinking about some of the insensitive comments made without awareness by others. I'm thinking about being a captain at the Oak Club with my squadron and being told by other African Americans that I wasn't black enough since I was spending more time with my squadron than with them. I'm thinking about my mentors and how rarely I had a mentor that looked like me. I'm thinking about the sound advice that has led to my success, and even so, most of my mentors could not relate to my experience as an African American. I'm thinking about the pressure I felt to perform error-free, especially for supervisors I perceived had expected less from me as an African American. I'm thinking about having to represent by working twice as hard to prove their expectations and perceptions of African Americans were invalid. I'm thinking about the airmen that have lived through similar experiences and feelings as mine, or who were either consciously or unconsciously unfairly treated. Conversely, I'm thinking about the airmen who don't have a life similar to mine and don't have to navigate through two worlds. I'm thinking about how these airmen view racism, whether they don't see it as a problem since it doesn't happen to them, or whether they're empathetic. I'm thinking about our two sons. Now, we had to prepare them to live in two worlds. I'm thinking about the frank and emotional conversations my wife and I have had with them just this past week as we discussed the situations that have led to the protests around our country. Finally, I'm thinking about my historic nomination to be the first African American to serve as the Air Force Chief of Staff. I'm thinking about the African Americans that went before me to make this opportunity possible. I'm thinking about the immense expectations that come with this historic nomination, particularly through the lens of current events plaguing our nation. I'm thinking about how I may have fallen short in my career and will likely continue falling short living up to all those expectations. I'm thinking about how my nomination provides some hope, but also comes with a heavy burden. I can't fix centuries of racism in our country, nor can I fix decades of discrimination that may have impacted members of our Air Force. I'm thinking about how I can make improvements personally, professionally, and institutionally, so that all airmen, both today and tomorrow, appreciate the value of diversity and can serve in an environment where they can reach their full potential. I think I don't have all the answers on how to create such an environment, whether here in PACAF or across our Air Force. I'm thinking about, without clear-cut answers, I just want to have the wisdom and knowledge to lead during difficult times like these. I want the wisdom and knowledge to lead, participate in, and listen to necessary conversations on racism, diversity, and inclusion. I want the wisdom and knowledge to lead those willing to take committed and sustained action to make our Air Force better. That's what I'm thinking about. I want to know what you're thinking about. I want to hear what you're thinking about and how together we can make a difference.
There are those who see the challenges facing the nation and say, send me. They fight for country. They fight for honor. They fight to win. Do you have what it takes? Find out at GoArmy.com/warriors.
Hello, everybody. This is Barack Obama. And I'm here to encourage each and every one of you to shop at doitallinthemall.com. This website will make a difference in our communities and in our lives. I encourage you to do all your shopping at doitallinthemall.com. Let's start making a difference today. Support your people by doing something you already do. It's just where you shop, and that is important and that matters. Keep the wealth in our communities. Shop doitallinthemall.com. Thank you very much. Obama out.
I wanted to come down to Fort Bliss mainly to say thank you and to say welcome home. A million men and women in uniform have now served in Iraq, and this has been one of our longest wars. But the fact of the matter is that there has not been a single mission that has been assigned to all of you in which you have not performed with gallantry, with courage, with excellence. And that is something that the entire country understands. You know, there are times where in our country we've got political disagreements. And appropriately, we have big debates about war and peace. But the one thing we don't argue about is the fact that we've got the finest fighting force in the history of the world. And the reason we have it is because of the men and women in uniform, in every branch of service, who make so many sacrifices, and their families make those sacrifices alongside them. Without you, we couldn't enjoy the freedoms and the security that are so precious. And all of you represent that long line of heroes that have served us so well generation after generation. You are welcome home with open arms from every corner of this country. People could not be prouder of you, and we are grateful. Thank you very much, everybody.
Lower than low prices? Then get more ways to save at Kroger, where you can find personalized coupons, weekly deals, and rewards like fuel points. All for prices that are lower than low. On food that's fresher than fresh. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
When I came into office, I inherited a deal that President Trump negotiated with the Taliban. Under his agreement, U.S. forces would be out of Afghanistan by May 1, 2021, just a little over 3 months after I took office. U.S. forces had already drawn down during the Trump administration from roughly 15,500 American forces to 2,500 troops in country. And the Taliban was at its strongest militarily since 2001. The choice I had to make as your president was either to follow through on that agreement or be prepared to go back to fighting the Taliban in the middle of the spring fighting season. There would have been no ceasefire after May 1. There was no agreement protecting our forces after May 1. There was no status quo of stability without American casualties after May 1. There was only a cold reality of either following through on the agreement to withdraw our forces or escalating the conflict and sending thousands more American troops back into combat in Afghanistan, lurching into the third decade of conflict. I stand squarely behind my decision. After 20 years, I've learned the hard way that there was never a good time to withdraw U.S. forces. That's why we're still there. We were clear-eyed about the risks. We planned for every contingency, but I always promised the American people that I would be straight with you. The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated. So what's happened? Afghanistan political leaders gave up and fled the country. The Afghan military collapsed, sometime without trying to fight. If anything, the developments of the past week reinforced that ending U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan now was the right decision. American troops cannot and should not be fighting in a war and dying in a war that Afghan forces are not willing to fight for themselves. We spent over $1 trillion. We trained and equipped an Afghan military force with some 300,000 strong, incredibly well equipped, a force larger in size than the militaries of many of our NATO allies. We gave them every tool they could need. We paid their salaries, provided for the maintenance of their Air Force, something the Taliban doesn't have. Taliban does not have an Air Force. We provided close air support. We gave them every chance to determine their own future. What we could not provide them was the will to fight for that future. There's some very brave and capable Afghan special forces units and soldiers. But if Afghanistan is unable to mount any real resistance to the Taliban now, there is no chance that 1 year, 1 more year, 5 more years, or 20 more years of U.S. military boots on the ground would have made any difference.
For the Hunter holding equity in this venture on behalf of his father, Joe Biden, Biden's campaign has denied having any plans to make
We do not own the rights to any information or music you hear at Let's Do It Radio.
Please leave comments on these shows. As you shop through the mall, the more funds we build up and a commission is earned on qualified purchases go back into your communities where your money matters. You can change lives and make lives matter while making a difference. Nationwide or worldwide, make Do It All in the Mall your shopping headquarters. Donations are welcome as well. Click on the donate button on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com. Contact us if you'd like to be on Let's Do It Radio, have a topic for discussion, or to advertise your business by sending an email to doitallinthemall@yahoo.com or by completing the contact us information on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com. The old-fashioned way works by calling 509-406-6920. You can Skype and tune in, listen or talk with us at 845-241-9985. Tuesdays through Fridays during the following times, 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, and 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Tuesdays, retired teacher Janet Schwartz, Keeping History Alive, alternating with Ralph Steele, Investment Specialist. Wednesdays, Reverend Carolyn McCullough, Teaching from the Bible. Wednesday evenings, alternating with Stephanie Lott Whitfield, Why Does Love Hurt? 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thursdays, hanging out with Sergeant Parks and keeping it real. Fridays, Perry Whaley, Vitiligo Man of Action, vibing with Vitiligo. Fridays, alternating poetry read by Roshamba Adwoa. Saturday, kids movies, listen with your ears day. 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, and 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Sunday service, listen only to guest speakers. 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, and 6 p.m. Eastern Time. First Sundays, Reverend Carolyn McCullough. Second Sundays, Dr. Ralph Steele. Third Sundays, Reverend Carolyn Williamson. Fourth Sundays, Reverend Ronnie Marshall. Fifth Sundays, Pastor Beatrice Jenkins. We'll close out today's with song.
Do It Radio at doitallinthemall.com. We're online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that includes holidays.
Hello, everybody. Yes, this is Barack Obama, and I'm here to encourage each and every one of you to shop at doitallinthemall.com. This website will make a difference in our communities and in our lives. I encourage you to do all your shopping at doitallinthemall.com. Let's start making a difference today. Support your people by doing something you already do. It's just where you shop, and that is important, and that matters. Keep the wealth in our communities. Shop doitallinthemall.com. Thank you very much. Obama out.